You're listening to Family Feud, part of the Paris Style podcast family. They might not be brother and sister, but they sure do fight like they are. Here's your hosts, Keely Orr and Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Feud podcast. I'm your host, Keely Orr, joined alongside Shotgun Spratling. It's a quick turnaround for USC this week as they face Washington State at home on a Friday, meaning tomorrow or today if you're listening to this on your drive to the game, which is probably in traffic. But USC is coming off their second straight loss. It's tough times for USC and Trojan fans, but we'll be getting into that. But before, as a reminder, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and Audioboom. And you can also email us questions and submissions to our podcast at familyfeudpod@gmail.com. Shotgun, how are you doing on this Thursday?
Oh, my goodness. It's been a whirlwind week and a half, you know, driving back from Stanford just to do the live show, go through that week, whatever. And then fly out to Austin Friday at midnight for me, get to Austin Saturday morning. I have an early morning shift for the LA Times, then the game, cover the game, have an early morning shift the next day after staying up till 4 in the morning. Then we got the emergency podcast, then left for a little bit, came back for the live show, then flying back, and then immediately go to practice. Like, it was just been a whirlwind week so far. Today's like the light day and of this week, and I have a live show, a podcast, and then go to work for 8 hours.
Okay, I asked you how you were doing, and you gave us like a whole itinerary of what you've done.
The week has been.
I mean, I wanted to tweet out like short weeks after an away game is gross. Welcome to my TED Talk, or like thanks for coming to my TED Talk, because it's so gross. And like, we're not even players and like having to do a physical game, but it's gross having a short turnaround like this.
You keep using the word gross.
It's gross. Explain. It's gross. I don't explain how it's gross.
Yeah. Why are you using the word gross? Most people think of like, oh, that food is gross.
It's like when I'm tired, like I'm just like, oh, it's gross.
So, yeah, we are, you know, we feel the impact of, you know, having an away game and coming back for a short week, even though it's a home game. You know, I can't imagine, you know, what they're going through last week at the same time getting ready for a road game, because USC would already have been traveling at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, they eliminated that in the Pac-12. But you see, you know, we feel kind of the impact or the effect of the travel and everything and having the short week. So, you know, the players are feeling it too. And it's something, you know, we talked on our live show about them not going full pads this week. I know a lot of people wanted that, but I think it was the right move just because of you're coming off a game where you had a team that ran a lot of plays. Your defensive line had to be out there a lot. Then you come back with a short week. You got to prepare for Washington State, which is a completely different offense than any of the teams you face so far. And then you play on Friday against a team that's going to want to go up tempo and run a lot of plays too. So I think it was probably the right move not to go full pads this week.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to thread the needle of overworking your players, resting them, or getting too lax that once USC comes out tomorrow on Friday, they're going to be a little slow to get going. So it's hard. You could have gone full pads Tuesday, maybe not necessarily Monday, but then you go backwards and Helton likes doing the Monday's a Tuesday, Tuesday's a Wednesday, yada, yada, yada. So I don't know. It's hard. It's difficult to thread the needle for sure. But the main point is it's a tough week for everyone involved with USC football. It's a tough turnaround. So I'm curious how that plays into the game. But shall we get into stock up, stock down?
Sure.
Stock up, who you got?
I'm going to start with JT Daniels, you know, the freshman having to throw 48 times. But I thought one of the things is he made quicker decisions. I talked with Brian Ellis this week, and that was something that he said he's progressed on from his first game to the third game, is that now he's making his decisions a little bit quicker. I thought that he had a pretty good game, you know, not spectacular, but I just thought his stock was up after, you know, not as great of a showing against Stanford.
Yeah, we did see some more chemistry with JT and his wide receiver. So that is at least was a bright spot coming out of that game. And of course, Amon Ra St. Brown is just a beast. I had stock up on Aka Cedric Ware. And now that's not necessarily something that is a physical performance that deserves a stock up, but I think it's stock up for at least taking ownership, being that senior guy. As we've said a million times, probably at this point, Aka Cedric Ware after the game on Saturday said that kind of called out his fellow teammates and said that they played lazy and slow leading up to against Texas. And when pressed further, he said, and Stanford too. So he kind of started this whole dialogue. I mean, we already had the dialogue, but it's interesting hearing the dialogue from players of how is practice going? Does practice need to be better? Not only practice, but he said, we need an offensive leader. I'm determined to be one and I'm going to find others. And that's something that you and I actually talked about leading up to the Texas game on this podcast. But that's something that USC is lacking, is an offensive leader. It's unfortunate that USC is trying to find one still at this point of the season. I know it's still early, but that's something that you want settled by before the season gets going. So when you do have losses like this, you can have some guys step up and try and turn things around. But I think for Sed to come out and say that, it's hard to do that. But for him to say that, I think is admirable and deserves a stock up.
That's interesting because that'll be the first ever stock up for a guy who had 4 carries for 8 yards.
That's what I'm saying. It's not stock up for his performance or maybe offensive line performance, but stuck up for leadership, trying to stand up.
Also, you point out that we have been looking for a offensive vocal leader. There are some leaders in the locker room, but they need somebody that's going to be fiery, that's going to get in somebody's ear, going to be not just the rah rah guy, or not just be okay, you did a good job, pat him on the back, you'd get better next time, but someone to get in after people when they're struggling out there on the field. I got Velus Jones Jr.
Yeah.
Velus had his best performance. It was kind of baffling that, you know, they went away from using him as much. They used him for 14 plays in the first quarter. He played 8 plays the rest of the game. So he had 4 catches for 71 yards, including a 40-yarder. I know that's something they had tried several times last year, is to try to get him open deep because of his speed. You know, he ran by a defender here in that game, and JT found him on that. So a nice 40-yard gain there. He had 3 other catches for 11 yards. And I think the first one, the first pop pass was actually called for penalty, so he didn't get that one on. So he could have had 5 catches, but a career-high yardage, I believe, for Velus Jones there. And I thought he had a really good game, and the chemistry seemed to be there with him and JT as well.
Yeah, I mean, he even seemed like he was feeling it on special teams a little bit. But that begs the question, why not ride the hot hand? Why not? I know Amon-Ra St. Brown came in third down situations, but why not try and get more opportunities for Velus?
Not sure. I mean, you have 3 guys that have played the slot with Amon-Ra kind of switching back and forth between outside and inside in that slot position. But you also have Trayvon Sidney. Trayvon Sidney had a good game against UNLV. Trayvon Sidney had a catch, I think, against Stanford. So you kind of wonder where it's at there. And Trayvon Sidney, the only time he was thrown to, I believe, was when he stepped out of bounds. And there were 4 officials there to throw a flag on that one. Yet 2 plays earlier, Amon-Ra had been clearly targeted, and there was no flags thrown. So
not only targeted, but they like kicked him in the head from the sideline. I could just see it, and I was like, this is ridiculous, but whatever. We'll get to that later. I had stock up on Jay Tufele watching the film again, and plug, we actually filmed our film session. Shotgun Spratling did a great job. We hooked up a camera, a mic, and we just put a mic in his face while we were looking at the film again. So you basically got an inside look at what we do every week. You just got to hear Shotgun say it this time. So it's up on the Peristyle. You can check that out. It's actually 18 minutes long, but Shotgun does a great job of breaking down the key plays that happened for USC, what went right, what went wrong. So if you want to check that out, go ahead. It's for VIP members, so check that out on the Peristyle.
Good plug.
Oh, but my plug was why I plugged that was because when we were watching tape, JT Felle just stands out. He's one of those guys that Shotgun would be like, whew, he's going to be a great player. And he's already been good, but I you just see the potential there in Jay.
Yeah, you see that there's explosive burst off the line. He uses his hands really well. There's a couple times where he just threw guys out of the way and was on his way to the quarterback, and the quarterback got rid of it quickly. That's the thing with defensive linemen. Like, they can have like 10 really good plays in a game, like where they just destroy an offensive lineman. And if it's a quick pass or something, you know, they may not even get one pressure in the game. It just depends on the offense. And that's something you're going to see again this week, because Washington State is going to throw a lot of quick passes. So with those defensive linemen, you know, it can be frustrating when you're facing a team like that and you're like, oh, I just made a really good move. I beat this offensive lineman, but I didn't even get a chance to get to the quarterback and get a hit on him. So how do those guys and their younger guys, how do they respond to that? You know, if they're winning some battles but not being able to apply that pressure that they're wanting, I'm curious to see how they play in this game. They're going to be crucial, especially if they can get their hands up on some balls. That's something that USC has not done so far this season, as well as they did last year, where they, you know, were able to bat a bunch of balls down with Uchenna Nwosu and Rasheem Green and other guys. They need to do that a little bit better to help out those DBs. Even those DBs, I think, have been playing pretty well.
Yeah, I actually talked to Kenichi Udezi this week about that, and he said, with defensive linemen, you just have to get to a rhythm. And a lot of these guys are still feeling it out. He started to say something to that effect. And I said, well, how much is that? Because you're working with such young guys on the D line. And he just went off. He was like, yeah, not off in a bad way, but like agreed. Like, it's so hard. People don't realize how young these guys are. And they're still learning a lot. And they're still getting in a rhythm. You have guys who, I mean, Brandon Peely played half of the season. Marlon Tuipulotu played a couple games. So you're still getting those guys into a rhythm. And he said, replacing a guy like Uchenna Nwosu is not easy. And so he says these things come with time and getting in a rhythm. And he said, despite Wazoo's offense, they're not going to change anything. They're not going to try and change what they do. It's kind of that coach mentality of, we're not going to change each week. We are who we are, and we're going to play up to that level. So it'll be interesting to see how they approach it. KU says it's not going to be any different, but interesting talking to him, and that will be up later today.
Yeah, Brandon Peely played half of last season. He also played half of the game.
It's true. And we both asked coaches about that. KU said that it was an internal thing. You heard from Clay Helton that he missed a meeting. Some candid from Clay Helton when KU didn't want to be candid. But KU said that Peely learned a valuable lesson, and he'll try and shore that up quickly.
And they're going to need him. They're going to need that entire defense line, because if Washington State gets their offense going at all, you're going to see a lot of plays. And the fact that, you know, a guy like Marlon Tuipulotu, I think he had to play, 50 or so plays in this past game. Looking it up, he played 51 total plays. You know, I think that those guys are going to, you know, need to be able to get off the field on third downs, but also need to be able to rotate those guys in when they have an opportunity so that they keep guys fresh on the defensive front. I also have the third down machine.
Oh,
Amon-Ra St. Brown. Because in the first half, you know, he played one full drive in the second quarter. Okay, he played two full drives. The one interception pass was a full drive, technically. we're not going to count that one. But besides that, he played one full drive, and that was the drive where Vi Malapai scored the touchdown after the Valus Jones long catch. And he was playing outside receiver there. The rest of the time, he came in as a third down specialist, basically. So the first three third downs USC gets into, Amon-Ra comes on the field. He catches a pass, gets them a first down. The first three times, all three of them. In the second quarter, they used him twice on third downs and once on a second down. The second down, he catches a 41-yard pass. You know, and when he was in the game in the first half, he was making plays. Same thing in the second half, obviously. But it was interesting to see how they used him as a third down guy early in the game. And then later in the second half is when he started playing full time.
Yeah, I think that's someone that USC has to have on the field. How do you find a way to have him on more down instead of just third down as we saw in the first half?
I don't know. I mean, I like him in that third down role to an extent, because you bring him in and he does some things that are a little bit differently, and he's fresh at the same time. So I think if you're going to use all three of those guys that you can in the slot with Valus and Trayvon Sidney and Amon-Ra, then I think you can specialize to an extent. And then, you know, he gets some drives later in the game, and play. Like I said, in the third quarter, he played every play on offense. So he ended up playing 35 total snaps. Trayvon Sidney had 18. Valus Jones had 22. So he's going to play the most out of that group. But if you're going to use all three of those guys, I don't mind, especially early in the game, you know, using him in a specialty role like that, because he's so good on that role. And we broke down some of those plays in our film study. It's just looking at how he's able to get himself open in some of these different things. I really like the way he runs those routes. And if JT has that safety blanket in the middle of the field, that's really convenient on third downs, and you know he's going to get open.
That's the big question, though. You said if you use all three guys there, should USC be doing that? If you watched earlier today, it will be on replay. We talked to Max Brown, former USC and Pitt quarterback, on our live show, and he said maybe it is a little bit of an embarrassment of riches for USC. Too much talent where you don't really hone in on one guy. And he said from a player perspective, it might be hard getting in a rhythm if you're Trayvon Sidney. You get in one play that you know the ball's coming to you and you don't make your shot and you get in your head a little bit. How much should USC try and nail down, okay, this is our slot guy, this is who we're using, so they can get into a rhythm?
I don't know. I mean, it's tough, because as a coach, you want to use a lot of weapons that you have, and those guys bring different elements. So I know it's hard to kind of say what you would do. I don't mind the way that they're using the guys. I think that you could even rotate them more frequently in drives, rather than saying, okay, you take the whole drive. You know, maybe it'd be every first down you switch somebody out, and you just kind of, you know, keeping guys fresh at all times. And, you know, guys, as a receiver, I don't feel like that you have to get in a huge rhythm as long as the quarterback knows where you're going to be. Now, that's the biggest thing. Is it for the quarterback so that the quarterback gets in a rhythm with who he's throwing to in that, at that slot position, and he knows, okay, this guy is what, this is what he does? If that's the case, maybe that's why you do it. But as a receiver, you're just running your route. It's not like you have to get in, you don't have to really feel out a bunch of stuff. You kind of feel out the coverages and stuff and how they're playing you in that regard. But to an extent, I think it's one of the positions where there's the least amount of trying to get into a rhythm.
I guess so, but I still feel like there's always going to be that mental aspect. I mean, we talked about Devin Williams' second play of the Stanford game. He got thrown a deep ball. It's just hard to get in that mindset and get comfortable. If you're in a tough environment in Texas and you're getting thrown into the game, I feel like you have to at least account for some of that mental toughness.
A little bit.
You're going to agree to disagree with me.
Pretty much.
That's all I got for stock up. You covered it. I had some other ones, but in a loss like this, it's hard finding stock up.
Yeah, there's not many stock ups.
Do you got anything else?
No, I got nothing else.
All right, let's go to stock down.
I mean, you go stock up, you know, atmosphere in Texas. It was great. Ooh,
that's a heard it on the sideline.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay. Stock down.
I think there should be a special category for stock crashing. Stock, oh, wow. Stock just done.
Wow.
USC special teams.
So, like, you're taking it off the market, stock.
Maybe.
Off the board.
I mean, you did ask Clay Helton after Texas game, should there be a change at special teams? Props to you, by the way. That's a tough question to ask after a loss like that, but need to be said. It really, really hindered the game. If anything, you want special teams to just, you did your job, but it didn't really affect the game. At the point where you're hindering the game, I mean, the block field goal, you said a million times, that's when the game was over. It changes the momentum so much when USC is trying to get back into it. And then you have punts with two different punters where, are you better off going fourth down? Are you better off going for it? Because at that point, you're not really flipping the field. And then you lose Chase McGrath to an ACL for the whole season. And that's a tough, tough break for him. It's a weird non-contact injury. But just you and I in our emergency Facebook Live were saying, if this is the result that we're going to see for how much USC practices special teams, something needs to change. You can't keep practicing as much as they do. And we did chart how much they practiced this week. It seemed like it got shorter, or at least cleaner and tighter a little bit tightened up, but it's just stock crashing for me.
Stock crashing. Wow. They did have a 13-yard punt, a 29-yard punt, and a 22-yard punt in that game. That gives them now 7 punts of 30 yards or less in the first 3 games. That's, I mean, that you don't want that many for the season. That's just a bad number. Their best punt on the year is a 48-yard punt, which was into the end zone, so it's a net 28. They've only had a few punts between 40 and 47 yards. So it hasn't been, that unit has been very bad for them. They also gave up the fake punt earlier in the year. They missed a field goal in the Stanford game. They had a block, obviously the block field goal that changes everything in the Texas game, because if USC makes that field goal, And granted, there are like 3 other plays on that drive. You know, Amon Ra is basically ridden out of bounds. Should have been a penalty, not called. There's a pass to Michael Pittman on 3rd down. He's right at the sticks. If it's about 4 inches lower, he probably catches it for a 1st down. And obviously the field goal becomes much shorter, even if you don't get into the end zone. But if they make that field goal, it's 23-14 at that time. You make that field goal, it's now a 6-point game. It's a 1-possession game. You get a defensive stop, and suddenly you have the momentum going. And that's the one of the things. One of the things that's on my stock down is actually the ability to swing momentum.
Yeah.
USC has not been able to do that in the Stanford game or in the Texas game. Once things start going, and granted, when you're on the road, it's much more difficult, but they don't have that one play. They can't draw up that one thing that's going to get things back in their coming in their direction. You know, being able to, you know, get a big play, and all of a sudden you silence that Texas crowd that got really loud. They didn't have that. When they were up 14-3, that crowd was silent.
It was. It was. That's why there's no excuses for, oh, it was really loud and whatever. They took the crowd out of it in the start of the game.
Yeah.
But you asked Clay Helton this week, how do you flip that? How do you keep confidence going even in a loss? And what do you have to say for that?
He basically said that, you know, once they gain confidence, once they make some more plays and once they get more experience, they'll have more confidence. So really there wasn't much of an answer.
Well, isn't that a chicken or the egg type of deal? Like, you get more confidence if you play better, but how do you play better if you have confidence, you know?
Yeah, kind of. And I think it basically comes down to they need to have a set, you know, there's three or four plays that you hold on to, like, all right, we need something that's going to swing the momentum. This is one of those type plays. Now, that, maybe that's a trick play. Maybe that's just something where, you know, we've seen this coverage. This is the play. We're going to save it for a minute. You know, we could probably try to get a big gain early in the game on it, but we're going to save this for when we really need it. And I don't know that they have that type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I got stocked down. I got the offensive line again. I got the tight ends again. Same thing as last week.
Same. It's rough. It's rough.
The offensive line was bad. It was just bad in this game. You know, when you only run the ball 16 times for negative 5 yards, now included in those are 3 sacks that cost them 26 yards. So you take away those 13 times for what did you gain? 21 yards? That's awful. Like that, you're taking away the sacks. That's not even, it's just when you're running the ball. They had almost as many negative plays when they were running the ball as they did positive plays. So there's guys coming through the line multiple times. You know, there's some decent play calls called up. There's a screen pass that we broke down where there's 4 offensive linemen with 3 defenders in front. Easily could have been if not a first down gain, if not even a bigger gain than that, a chunk yardage play. Instead, no one gets blocked. Like, and it's not just like, oh, well, one guy got by. No one. All 3 defenders go straight by the offensive lineman, and no one blocks anybody. It's that type of thing that's very frustrating when you're watching the game and you see, like, it's kind of repetitive, too. You'll see them. They'll get beat physically sometimes, but you'll see guys run through the middle of the line on a stunt, and nobody touches anybody. And they're kind of looking around at each other like, what just happened? It's just very frustrating to watch this offensive line right now.
Yeah, and for as much as it's annoying to hear guys like T. Martin say execute, a lot of it sometimes is execution, communicating. I mean, you and I both think that T. Martin did at least a good job of trying to account for the offensive line not playing as well. And it still had trouble at times just because they're just not playing to the best of their ability right now.
Yeah, and there's some talented guys on there individually, but as a group, they're not doing well. And, you know, you'll talk about it and heard it on silent, but the 4th down play, they had an opportunity there. The play call is good enough to get them in the end zone, and they don't execute that at all. You know, both of the tight ends allow penetration. Then you have Vi Malapai trying to decide whether or not, as a fullback, you know, how much has he practiced this? I don't know. How experienced does he know whether to stop and try to block somebody versus continuing on his path to block the cornerback? He decides to block one of the guys that comes through. Probably didn't have to. And instead, he gets a chop block called on it. So even if they would have scored, it wouldn't have mattered in that case. It's just a lot of things that are not going right with the blocking up front for JT Daniels and the running backs.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, if you want to see that broken down even more, go to the Peristyle. We have that broken down. But in the same line, I have just blocking in general. I mean, the tight ends, it's a liability at this point. They're not doing well. And then wide receivers. I thought the wide receivers did not block well. If you're going to have a quicker game and you're going to have more screens and you're not, Trayvon Sidney did not do a great job of blocking. If you're in there mainly to block, you should get your job done. So I just think that the blocking in general was not good. As far as tight ends go, though, this is one of my questions, but I'll move it up now. How do you alleviate your tight ends not doing a great job of blocking, and then when they're targeted, not doing a great job of holding on to the ball either?
Don't put them in the game.
Yeah, is it? I guess what I'm saying is, are we at that point?
It's very close. I mean, you know, if you're not going to block and you're not going to catch the ball when it comes your way, now the tight ends had a couple of catches this game. Tyler Petit had 2 for 9. Josh Follow 2 for 6. The very short yardage situations. Or very short catches on those. Now, USC used some 4 wide receivers once again. Maybe you see that become a more prevalent formation for them. They've also used the 3 running backs and 3 receivers and 2 running backs occasionally. So, the running backs are doing a pretty good job blocking, I think, as an overall unit. They're doing a much better job than the tight end. So maybe that's something you have to go to more. And then even you have an opportunity to use one of those guys as a lead blocker on run plays too, but in the passing game, they've done that. But even sometimes, I mean, the one play we broke down where there's 8 guys.
Max protection.
You keep in 2 tight ends. You keep in the running back along with your 5 offensive linemen. You're running a 2-man route on the outside. Now, granted, maybe the 2-man route, maybe there wasn't an opening there. But JT Daniels should have had more time to make a decision on whether he wanted to throw it or throw it away. Instead, 4 pass rushers is all Texas was bringing. and they were able to break right through and pressure JT. He has to throw the ball away. It's just like those type of things should never happen. Never. Eight guys to block four. You should be able to block, make that every single time.
And that's something that T. Martin said after the game. I think it's getting to the point where T is a little bit frustrated with having to answer for things that are not necessarily his fault. And he said, I don't know how we don't block those guys. I don't know how we don't do it. So how that gets figured out, if that gets figured out, I'm not sure. I mean, Texas's front is similar to Wazoo's in that sense. So how does USC make adjustments? Is it easier if you face something like that and you're facing it similar to the next game you're playing? Or is it like, oops, we have to play in a front that we weren't good against again?
Yeah, a lot of motion, a lot of quick attack type stuff that you're going to see from these fronts. And you'll see zone pressures, which Texas brought sometimes. And USC capitalized a couple times. You know, the first or the second, third down conversion of Amon-Ra St. Brown was just that Texas, you know, overloaded one side and they couldn't get their defensive end back in time to kind of guard where Amon-Ra St. Brown was going to be. So you have to take advantage of when they bring those zone pressures and when they bring those blitzes. You got to be like, oh, this is an opportunity. They're bringing extra guys. That means we got one-on-one. They can't cover all our guys. We're going to have openings. Instead, it's like, oh, no. They're bringing four guys. Oh no! It seems like it's troublesome for USC when they bring four guys. If they don't shore up the offensive line, the season is going to be rough continually. And facing Washington State, you've just seen a lot of the same type of things. Can you block them against guys that probably aren't as good as Texas's defensive linemen? Just because, you know, Texas usually gets a little bit better recruits than Washington State. So can you, if you can't block these guys against Washington State when you've just seen the same thing, that tells you all you need to know about the way the season's going to go.
I mean, this game in general, we'll get to it later. This game in general seems like a turning point of the season. Whether it goes either way, I think it kind of dictates where this season goes.
Speaking of turnarounds, I got one more on stock down. I got third down switcheroo.
Oh.
So USC, I believe they were, I had the numbers written down on a different piece of paper, but USC was really good in the first half on third downs. Obviously, that's the third down machine, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I believe they were they started 6 of 7, I want to say. And then after that, I think they went 0 of 8 the rest of the game. And then you look at Texas on the other side. Texas picked up a couple of big third downs that helped them out in their early drives. They started the game 4 of 11 on third down in the first half. They finished the game 6 of 8, I believe.
Wow.
So it was basically a complete switcheroo, and you saw that USC was up 14-3, and then suddenly Texas scored 34 straight points. And if you convert on third down, the other team doesn't, you're going to win.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. I mean, unless you're just giving up giant plays. Giant touchdown plays all the time on first or second down. But if you are converting on third down and keeping the other team, sending the other team off the field on defense, you're usually going to win the game. USC was doing that in the first half. They didn't do it in the second half.
Mm-hmm. My last stock down is the refs. I feel like this goes without saying. It's pretty rough. I mean, it makes you wonder what if. I know football is a game of that, and USC did their own doing to lose. But what happens if that's a safety? What happens if they have 16 points?
Should have been a safety.
I know. So, I mean, how does that change the game? Amon-Ra, does he get a PI there? All that stuff where you're just wondering what happens if Porter Gustin doesn't pop off the helmet of Sam Ehlinger. What happens there? You know, Porter said that it was clear. He wasn't trying to do anything dirty if you look back at the tape, but he understands. But still, things like that where you wonder what if calls kind of go USC's way, if the correct calls are made, safety. But, you know, so it's just stock down. Not good.
When the national television crew is actually pointing out, like, USC can't get a call in this game, then it kind of stands out to you even more. USC did not get any calls in this game, basically. And when that happens, you need something to steal the momentum back. And USC, that's part of the ability to swing the momentum. That's why it's stocked down, because when things are going against you, particularly on the road, what do you do to counter that? And USC doesn't seem to have anything. You know, it just seems like it snowballs on them. You know, bad call here, bad call there. But then, okay, well, now they got a third down conversion. Now they got this. So it just seems like things are compounding for USC rather than them being able to be like, It's okay. It was a bad call. All right, let's change the outcome of the game on the next play rather than worrying about what just happened that last play.
Yeah, and I don't think I've seen Clay Helton as just furious and angry at refs.
Can you tell what he said?
No, we need to add a bleeping button to this if I do. But he was to the point where he was pointing at the refs and like, you, the other words were thrown in. But and then for the safety call.
Bleep?
Yeah, a lot of bleepers. But when after the ref tried to explain to Helton why it wasn't a safety, and Helton just gave him a death glare that made me think, I'm glad I'm not Clay Helton's like family member, because if you got in trouble and he's your dad, like that death glare was daggers. So it was rough. But that's all I got for Stockdown. I could go on, but you know.
True. How about Heard It? You were down the sidelines.
I know. I miss my sideline buddy, Mr. Shotgun. yeah, it was crazy. The atmosphere was unreal. Record crowd of 103,000 plus.
507, I believe.
Yeah, there you go. So it was a crazy, crazy atmosphere. Nothing like football in Texas. It was crazy. But obviously, not unfortunate for USC. But for me, I thought there was a real change in the sideline. It was unimpressive what USC did at Stanford when it was a semi-home game with so many USC fans there, and you have the Trojan marching band right in your corner. But for them to come out in such a crazy environment and to play so well and to shut down the crowd in the first quarter, I didn't think this team was capable of it. I didn't think this team could like being the underdog and come out and silence a crowd like that. And it's like what I said in instant analysis after the game is the first quarter showed who this team can be. Mm-hmm. But the next three quarters proved who they actually are when put up against the test. So I thought that might be USC's an underdog in this environment. They'll shut down the crowd. They might win and then take this momentum into Pac-12 play, but obviously that didn't happen.
And they had a lot of energy in the first quarter, is that right?
Yeah, they were hyped up. And I mean, Texas was really hyped up on the sideline, but it was the most we've kind of seen from USC in the beginning. And so many horns down, which is just, and maybe wait till after the game to do that. But yeah, they were definitely hyped up for at least the first quarter, but it definitely died after that.
Yeah, a couple of things went against them. And again, once the momentum started rolling for Texas, USC had no answer for it.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And you talked about this. You thought it was the loudest crowd you've been?
Yeah, it was unreal. I know I keep saying that and people are like, yeah, we get it. Texas is great. But it was a crazy environment. It was so loud. And part of the problem is that you have communication issues. We can get into the 4th-and-1 play. USC comes out of an injury timeout and they're trying to get set up on the line and there's confusion there. On that drive previously, Andrew Voorhees comes out with his MCL sprain. So Andrew Voorhees is still in the tent and Elijah Vera Tucker is on the side and in the game and he doesn't know what the call is. And so you have Chris Brown Tol Obendon's trying to communicate with JT Daniels. Chris Brown is trying to tell Elijah Vera Tucker what's happening. Also, you have Eric Cromanhook trying to get what's happening. But it was so loud that the players had to put their helmets face mask to face mask and like scream. You could see how hard they were trying to just scream and get the call. And they just looked so confused. At least Elijah Vera Tucker did. And they were trying to get the call in and get things settled, but it didn't look like they were settled once the play got going.
And Max Brown brought up a good point during our live show is that you can do so much in the huddle, but then once you get out and you see the front, then you have to make adjustments to the calls and stuff. And that appeared to be what USC didn't get. Or maybe Elijah Vera Tucker still just didn't get the play because apparently he was supposed to pull on that play. You know, it was a toss sweep to the outside. Chris Brown is pulling from the backside. It seemed like Vera Tucker should have been pulling on the front side as well, along with having Vi Malapai out there. So it seemed like if USC would have run the play correctly, and especially if they wouldn't have, if they would have been to stop the penetration got by the tight ends, that's a touchdown.
Yeah, which makes you wonder, and this is actually what started the whole said talking about practice, is how much practice do they have, full pads, goal line, red zone stuff? You know, how much have we seen Vi be a fullback and run that play? You know, we haven't really seen that. Granted, they might do that on Thursdays when we don't see them, but how much practice do they have where they can come out in that situation and be confident that they know what they're going to run and run it well?
Yeah, there's the fine line between, okay, well, we don't want to show anything while the media is there, and we'll practice these things on Thursday. Because there's some things we see in the game, we're like, oh, well, we've never seen that before.
Yeah.
But then also, you're going in basically helmets that day. So you're just walking through. So you need to actually practice some things at full speed. And this is not, that is not the day for it. Sometimes you just got to say, you know what, we're going to run this and we're going to make sure nobody, you know, hopefully the media is not telling anybody. I mean, that's what we're not supposed to do, which we don't do.
That's why you don't hear us talk about anything we actually like formation wise see in practice.
Yeah. So we'll see if they start doing that in the future. That's what I would advise them. Like, hey, at some point you got to start practicing, you know, the tough stuff in on the days when you have pads on.
Or just do it. I mean, we don't get let in till 4:10 and they start practicing around like 3:45. So ish. So do that. Run it before we get there. Do something. Maybe they are. Could be. In that same sense, I thought some of the offensive coaches were at least more fired up in practice this week a little bit. Clay Helton was definitely yelling more. I know coming into the gate, walking past the practice field before I got in on Monday, I could hear them practicing. Like, usually you rely on whistles. I could hear on voices. Like, there were people yelling. I was like, oh, this is interesting. I was like, maybe the marching band is out practicing or something. But it was the coaches. And Clay Helton was very into it, very active. Tim Drevno was really on the scout team and making sure they were actually giving them a good look and being aggressive. And that's something that was missing. A lot of the times it seemed like the scout team was like a little bit of a walkthrough or giving a ton of separation to wide receivers where that catch is easy. Whereas if you go in a game, they're not going to let you make that catch, you know? So it's good that we're at least seeing them make corrections in practice and be more aggressive on scout team. But at the same time, why does this need to be corrected week 4? You know, I don't know.
From my heard on the sideline, since I wasn't on the sideline for the game, unfortunately, I was in the press box. I'll go to practice this week when I talked to Brian Ellis about what he thought of JT Daniels. And you know, he said he's making those quick decisions. He's liking the progress that he's making. But I asked him, how do you adapt as an offense to kind of open things up when you're getting really quick pressure when the offensive line's not really doing their job? He said, well, we've got to give him some quicker options. And he said, I thought we did a lot better job of that in the Texas game. And he said, you're not going to have a ton of time at this level of football, especially when you play really good opponents. He said, that's going to happen. He said, you usually get between 2 and 3 seconds to throw a football. He said, I think the average in the NFL is 2.5 seconds. We probably at this level get 2.75. So you got to get the ball out. The only thing is JT Daniels has not been getting that much time. When there's been pressure, it's been at 2.3, 2.4 seconds. So you're forcing him to do that. He said, you've got to figure it out a lot quicker than we've done. Again, I thought we got better at that last game. We've got to continue to improve, and I think he will as the season goes along. So I think that they're trying to do some things on the offensive side to give him some quick options rather than just having, you know, long developing plays because of how quickly the pressure has gotten there. But I thought it was interesting that he basically gave out numbers of saying, okay, you know, in NFL, you usually get 2.5 seconds. Here you get 2.75. So USC, I mean, their offensive line needs to get him to that 2.75.
I don't know if it's because he's still a little green, but Brian Ellis is a great interview. He gives a lot of detail and he's actually specific. There's not a lot of coach speak settling in yet, so it's always nice talking to him. My final heard it is I saw it on the sideline in practice this week. Tyler Rons usually practices without gloves, and this week he actually was practicing with gloves. And we asked him about it, and he said, "Well, I figured I should start doing that because I have to do it in games, so I should probably start practicing with it." Which I don't know. To me, I'm like, why aren't you doing that earlier? If you're struggling or if you're not having chemistry with JT, why aren't you trying to mimic what you do in games earlier?
Because if you practice without gloves on, it becomes easier in the game.
Sure, but why not practice like you play?
I practice and played without gloves.
Oh, look at you.
They call me the web because I'm catching everything.
That's false.
It's not true. That's not true.
Thank you. Yeah,
it's true. I had a towel that said it on it. The web.
Oh, this is another herded that I just thought of, which is great.
Go for it.
Because you said it's not true, which is going to come into play here. True. The meet and greet at the Key Bar in Austin was great. You weren't there. God,
this is not true. I already know what's going on.
You weren't there. I heard some people ask for you where you were. I also met people who you bartended for earlier. Wendy Dunn, shouts to her. So someone said, I'm here to tell you stock neutral. And Shotgun's going to say that you made it up, but I'm true. Stock neutral. So I swear I didn't make this up. Stock neutral.
What's
nation.
This person's name?
We out there. Oh, shoot. Yeah, you I'm just sorry. Made it up. I think his name is Richard. Yeah, not sure. I'm sorry if I forgot.
No, that was Richard was the one I had met on the train.
Okay, my bad. Maybe it's his name. I don't know. He was wearing a black hat. And a black shirt, I believe.
Mm-hmm. You didn't believe when I had one. Anyways,
I'm just saying.
Moving
yeah.
on.
Moving on.
Moving on from these falsities.
Agree, disagree. Clay Helton should make more constructive comments in post-game pressers.
I mean, I think he should make more constructive comments in the post-game talks with the team. That's more important than what he tells the media. I know some people are aggravated by it. It would help to have more answers, you know, give a direction of where the team's going and make it seem like you know where the direction of the team's going rather than I know one of the and one of the most annoying tweets that I get is, you know, the Gomer Powell, you know, tweets about Clay Helton saying that he's just basically a hick that doesn't know anything when obviously he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So, but when you don't give any answers, that just leads into that that storyline as well. Whereas, you know, I think he could give more answers, but also I think he's more of a cerebral type of coach where he likes to see the tape first. I know that's why he asks for it all the time. So it goes both ways, I think.
Yeah, I he actually addressed this a little bit in his Sunday conference call. He said, when things are tough, I don't want to make the mistake of being upbeat to say that I don't have a care, a concern, and an effort level to make sure that our seniors are not Pac-12 championships champions again. When times are tough, you get to see exactly who you are and have the ability to lead. I love being a leader, and I've been in this situation before, and essentially kids react how you react. So I think he has a positive face outward. I just think sometimes that rubs people the wrong way. How do you feel about when you ask him about special teams? He gives a great vote of confidence for John Baxter when it's probably the worst special teams performance we've seen in his tenure. How do you justify that?
It tells you that he has confidence in John Baxter, I guess.
But I know it's a weird line because these are your coaches, your guys you work with, and you're not about to skewer them to national media. But at the same time, you say, "Hey, we need to clean things up. It wasn't a great performance, but I still believe in Baxter." I mean, essentially what he said.
He basically said, "Well, the punters aren't doing their job, and we'll get the kicking figured out."
Yeah, I guess so. I'm just trying to figure out how you balance that without sounding too optimistic. I don't know. Agree, disagree. The wheels will come off if USC loses to Washington State at home on Friday.
That's tough.
Yeah.
I think I agree that the wheels will come off if the offensive line continues to play as it has been.
What makes you think that is going to change? I don't expect a rapid improvement unless they play a lesser opponent.
I mean, I think
even still, they struggled a little bit against UNLV.
I'll be honest. I think the wheels are off right now. I think USC's offensive line can put them back on. They're like the pit stop crew. He can put them back on. But right now, I think the wheels are off and you're like waiting in the pit crew, like, or waiting in the pit stall going, all right, come on, guys, put them back on. We got to get on the track. And until the offensive line decides to like lumber out there and put them on there, I don't think this team's going anywhere. I think the car is going to be sitting in the pit stall until the offensive line puts the tires on. That's a good analogy right there. I just killed that one.
Wow. He's humble, too.
That's a NASCAR analogy right there. You guys didn't even know that was coming.
It's just so many questions. I don't see that happening. But then if you have a poor season, Clay Helton will get the blame. Where do you suss out what happens next?
Well, Clay Helton has to make changes.
Yeah.
I mean, I've called for that. It's like if you lose two games like they've done the last two games, there has to be some kind of change. Was there this week? Man, not really. There was some. The offense coaches were more active, more vocal, I would say.
Some of the YouTube comments in the incident were like, yay, they yelled more. Great.
It's true.
Yeah.
So if the same thing happens this week, you know, what change can you make? And if Clay Helton doesn't make changes, I think Dan wrote this after the game, is like, if you're not going to make the changes, then the change is going to be you.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I did not come out of the UNLV game super positive. You, on the other hand, were a little bit different, but it just showed that nothing changed as far as coaching changes go, as far as changes that need to be made. I mean, if the O-line is not doing well, I mean, this is Neil Calloway's third year. I don't know. I don't like calling for people to job, but changes need to happen.
It's the same thing. I mean, if you don't make the changes, then the change is going to be you. And it's for the position coaches. And then it's even farther. And then it's the coordinators above them. And then it's the head coach above them.
So
if you don't make changes to what is below you, what you're controlling, then the change becomes you. You're the one that has to go.
So in that sense, how what is the warmth of Clay Helton's seat?
I don't think Clay Helton's seat's that warm right now just because of what he's stockpiled, you know, in his cachet of what he's done so far. But if you continue to have a bad season, if the season stays in the pit stall, then I think then that's when it becomes an issue. And we don't really know about Lynn Swann because we haven't seen any, you know, big moves that he's made so far. So it depends on, you know, how his feeling is more than anybody else's. And again, USC doesn't have a president right now. So are you really going to fire the football coach when you don't have a president?
Yeah.
Because usually the president's going to have some say in that. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into it.
Yeah. And Lynn Swann was at practice this week. I think it was Tuesday's practice. And we don't see him a lot. So
probably the third time this fall, I think. You think it was more than that?
A little bit more than that. But I do remember at the Stanford loss, Lynn had a long conversation with Clay before he talked to the media in his post-practice interview. So, yeah, it's really a mystery with Swann and how all those factors come into play. But if USC wins, what does that mean for this season?
It doesn't mean a ton for the season. It depends on how they play if they win. If they win and the offensive line suddenly is playing better and you see some change being affected, then and you think, okay, well, maybe they can make a little bit more change, then, you know, this season can build upon itself. But until they show us something, show us doing something different, show us a punter that's going to kick the ball consistently 40 yards, you know, you're just going to assume that it's going to be the same.
Yeah. And so in that sense, moving on to our question portion of the pod, you predicted USC would go 3-2 this month.
I did.
They still have that option. But does it feel that way? If you get to the end of this month, does it still feel like, oh, it's 3-2, but they're still positive? Or how does this feel to you?
I think it depends on how they play the next two games. And if you feel like there's progress being made, then, yeah, you feel like, okay, we lost the two tough teams. We're going to start playing better. And, you know, we're going into Pac-12 schedule. We're playing it a little bit better now. I think you feel that way. But if it's kind of, you know, if it's the Colorado game last year or even the Utah game last year where you feel like, whew, we got to win. Not, okay, we won that. Yeah, let's keep going.
Yeah.
It felt more like a relief that you got the win rather than, you know, excitement that you got it. I think it depends on that as to how you're feeling after the first month. But again, I thought they'd start 3-2. That's still quite possible. I mean, this game's going to be much tougher than I think than even next week because Arizona has not showed us anything so far, trying to force Khalil Tate to be a pocket passer. So I think you're on the path where you're kind of at a fork. You know, you're looking at the line graph and it forks, you know, up and down. Do they start making progress and go up or do they continue to go down? So,
yeah, I don't know. Do you feel like T. Martin is calling plays that are equal to the ability of his players?
That's tough. I mean, you're calling some screen plays and stuff. You're trying to do these quick hitters to alleviate some of the pressure. And instead, your offensive line is not getting out and blocking guys on some of the screen plays and different things. I think he's doing a pretty good job. I thought the Texas game plan was pretty good. And with what has been going on with that offensive line, I just think those offensive linemen have to do a better job. I mean, if you have four guys and there's three defenders, at least block one of them. I mean, come on. At what point do you just be like, all right, we got to bench everybody because this unit just does not work at all. Like, and I know the backups are the backups for a reason, but at some point you just got, like, we got to change something. At least, like, if they have a bad drive, be like, all right, second team, go in there. I don't care if we go 3-9 on this next drive. You guys are sitting because you're playing like crap.
Yeah. At what point does it really make a difference in that sense? Like, if they're not going to block anybody, why not see what your second team can do and give a little jolt to your first team?
And the bad thing is, like, when they do block, like when Chuma gives a lot of effort, he will take guys back 6 yards on run plays and stuff. And, you know, when Toa is able to get out in front of things, you see what these guys can do. Like you said, the first quarter, you see what this team can be.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, you see what they are.
Exactly. So, I mean, the interesting thing was talking to Max Brown today, how much full pads makes a difference for the line, the O-line and the D-line. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you, just for the sake of improving your O-line, do you just try and do more full pads just so they're more aware or more used to it?
Change something.
I know.
And you look at, you see the 23-yard touchdown run that Stephen Carr makes. Now, Stephen Carr, that could easily have been a 3-yard run. Stephen Carr, you know, hits the defender with a shoulder, powers through it, and continues on. But you see the action up front and before that. Tyler Petit gets a block, he reaches around a guy and is able to throw him to the ground. He does a nice job getting inside the guy for the run.
Stares him down a little bit too.
Austin Jackson gets to the, you know, helps out, gives a little, get a little tap to the guy that Tyler Petit's doing. You know, just a baby combo block there. But he gets to the second level. He picks up the linebacker, takes the linebacker basically into the path of another linebacker. So he's blocking two guys. So now instead of three guys being there when Stephen Carr gets to the second level, there's only two. And, you know, one guy, Stephen Carr, hits with a shoulder. The other guy, you know, doesn't make the tackle. Stephen Carr is gone. And I said when we were watching the game, is like, that run right there is good from 99 yards. That's a touchdown from 99 yards, touchdown from 50 yards, touchdown from 23 where they're at, touchdown from 2 yards. Doesn't matter. Because once he broke that tackle, he was gone. Nobody was catching him. There was nobody there. It was one of those type of plays. The safety was there. The linebacker was there. Once he breaks free, he's gone. And that's what your running backs can give you. Stephen Carr can do. That's what, you know, Cedric Ware can break tackles and get out in the open field. You know, but you have to block so they can get to that second level. What you saw the rest of the game, they never got to the second level. They were getting hit in the backfield, and they didn't have an opportunity to go break a tackle. You see Stephen Carr on some of these runs. The very first run, we spotlighted on the breakdown if you get a chance to watch that. But the very first run, he goes outside. He makes the first guy miss. That's what he does. He can make that first guy miss, but then there's two other, three other, four other guys there. He's not making five guys miss in a two-yard span.
No, yeah.
Not even Reggie was doing that.
the goat.
Yep.
We have a semi-long question from Josh from the Mojave Desert. He wants our thoughts, so he kind of, we'll get into it. He says, unfortunately, what USC fans are seeing right now is the reemergence of the real Coach Helton. I say reemergence because we got a chance to see his true self also in 2014 when the Trojans started 4-1. Sam Darnold was an extremely rare talent. His greatness covered up Coach Helton's ineptitudes with a Rose Bowl win and a Pac-12 title. There will be no Sam Darnold to come in and turn things around for Helton this time. If you're looking for evidence, just look at Darnold's first game in the NFL. I think there's a real possibility that the Trojans go 5-7 this year with no bowl game. What are your thoughts?
I disagree with that, but I don't think they'll go 5-7. I think the floor is 7-5. I've said that before, I believe, on the show as well. But I don't buy into the whole thing. I think Sam Darnold helps out covering up some stuff. He helps out covering up the offensive line ineptitude to an extent because he can make guys miss himself and get out of the pocket. But I think that's what it's covering up. Not necessarily that Clay Helton can't coach. I think that maybe that Clay Helton is too loyal to a fault and it did not make some changes with the offensive line, previously. And, you know, that they brought in Trim Drevno to help out, that's a good thing. Now, why are we not seeing the impact of that? What is the issue with the offensive line? I think the offensive line is the whole key to this team. I don't think it's Clay Helton. You know, I don't think he was, you know, beholden to Sam Darnold, and Sam Darnold was the only reason that the USC did okay in the last couple of years. I don't think that's the reason. I think Clay Helton has a good system. You know, the players respect him. You know, talking to Max Brown, he said the same things. You know, the players respect him. The players, you know, really try hard. You know, but if your offensive line doesn't play well, you can't do anything on offense.
Yeah, I feel like I half agree with it. I think there are going to be some struggles when you have a first-time head coach and at the time a first-time offensive coordinator. I think Sam Darnold was a great talent, as you can see. I think the difference you're seeing this year is that, at least last year, Sam Darnold had the experience plus talent. This year you have the talent of JT Daniels, but you have the inexperience.
That's a good point.
And so sometimes that's where you see things go wrong, or JT not knowing how to do certain things, or Sam Darnold did. And so you have that combo of coaching plus talent plus inexperience, and that's why you're seeing a different outcome. You can't, and at the same time, like, and we've heard this from a lot of the coaches, is like, you are replacing Deonte Burnett. You are replacing Ronald Jones. You are replacing Sam Darnold. You are replacing Uchenna Nwosu. You know, it's, I know USC is really talented, and I know USC fans expect players to just come in and be a plug and play and be like, oh, it's a video game. You replace this guy, it's going to be perfect. And it's not always like that. And I know it's kind of hard to hear that, but at the same time, these are young guys that are still developing. So yes, coaching is definitely an issue at times, but it's also, these are young guys and inexperienced guys, and they're not going to be as perfect as you might see a Rojo who's been playing for 3+ years.
I agree.
Wow. Agree.
For once.
Any final thoughts? We predicted scores in our live show. I thought this might be a win for Wazoo.
Could be.
You think it's a win for USC?
Yeah, I don't think they cover the spread, which is 3.5, but I think it'll be a close win potentially. You know, the tough part for USC is the defense has to completely, you know, is revamp what they've been doing the last couple of weeks. You know, it's a completely different offense that they're going to face. You know, Texas does have some spread principles more than Stanford or UNLV, but Washington State brings a completely different offense, and USC has to learn that on a short week. So I think it's going to be challenging there. And the USC offensive line has to deal with that zone pressure and, you know, those quick defensive linemen that are going to be undersized. Now, what I would do is just run it straight at them. Run it right down their throats and use it, force those younger, smaller defensive linemen to make some plays getting by your bigger offensive line. And, you know, if USC can do that, then they can, if they can control the line of scrimmage, it'll be a much different game.
I think USC, the short week is going to affect them. I think this is not a team that if Wazoo comes out and scores right away, I don't think that they can turn things around. Like you said, I don't think they have the mental toughness to flip the script and come back. I think if you pressure this O-line enough, this offense can't really get anything going. And I don't think that we've seen enough offensive production from USC for me to be confident that they can pull through in this one.
Well, what are you talking about? If they get a score, you know, the crowd, the USC Coliseum crowd on a Friday night is going to really boost them to a win, right?
All 14 people at the Coliseum.
Yeah. If you have a chance, get out to the stadium, but, you know, just realize that parking is not going to be great. You're not going to be able to tailgate at all on campus. So I don't know what to tell you.
It's going to be rough.
Probably. It's probably not going to be the greatest crowd.
Friday traffic.
Take the Metro. Take the Metro.
Go Metro. Ooh, Ryan,
if you are
no.
near a, if Ryan is shaking his head, but if you're near a light rail line, take the Metro.
Sure. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, I'm thinking I'm done.
Alrighty.
I'm done here.
Thanks for listening to our podcast on a Thursday. We'll be back next Thursday for another episode of the Family Feud podcast. As always, you can email us familyfeudpod@gmail.com.
Send us your emails.
We appreciate it very much. Last podcast, I said the Angels, someone sent me something about the Angels. It was Daniel. He was like, I feel like you didn't even read my email. I did, Daniel. Don't worry. I did. So shout out to you. But that's going to wrap it up for today's podcast for Shotgun Smartling. I'm Keely Orr. For more, check out USCfootball.com. That's my instant analysis outro, but it works for this too. We'll see you guys next week.